Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry, where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.
Providing insight and resources for your spiritual journey. Unity Online Radio.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions, with Paul John Roach, Minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here's your host, Paul John Roach.
So, hello and welcome to today's show on World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Unity Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Today I have the privilege of talking with psychotherapist, author, yoga teacher, and scholar Greg Bogart about his excellent book. It's entitled In the Company of Sages, The Journey of a Spiritual Seeker, and it's a wisely argued and satisfyingly comprehensive analysis of the 9 stages of spiritual apprenticeship, from choosing a teacher to finding the teacher within and equipping ourselves to be a teacher in our own right. And although it's a thoughtful book, it has many practical tips and guides, numerous real-life experiences. Obviously, Greg is very well-read, too, because there's quotes from a panoply of spiritual teachers and masters, and I love that. Some old friends of mine, in terms of not necessarily being in their physical presence, but knowing them through their writings. So it's a pleasure to welcome Greg Bogart to today's show. Welcome, Greg.
Well, thank you very much. Glad to be here.
You know, your personal story is quite compelling, isn't it? You've got had a long apprenticeship yourself with many spiritual teachers, particularly Swami Muktananda, and then through astrology, yoga, psychotherapy, other modalities. It's a long journey. So my first question is, where are you now in terms of your life unfoldment? What has all this brought you to at this moment?
Well, I'm still in training. I study with yoga teachers and music teachers and therapy teachers. As a psychotherapist, I continue to work on issues that come up for me working with people by going to training and consultation. But mostly I am being a therapist and teaching at Sonoma State University and writing about some of my experiences.
And this book was published a little while ago, wasn't it, and came out in a revised edition, I understand. I find it very compelling. It's a wonderful summation of this particular, sort of the spiritual journey, if you like, this particular subject.
Thank you.
So why was it brought out again now? What was the purpose?
Well, it was originally a self-published book in 1997, and it had need to be updated and re-edited. Some of my writing has improved over the years, and then I've gained new experiences having different teachers, and just felt like I could write it in a more mature fashion. Plus, we added photography, because one of the things that gave rise to the book was I took a journey to South India with my father in 1996, and my father was always a little skeptical about all the spiritual gurus that I would hang out with.
Right.
He decided to travel with me to check out India, and so there was a lot of talking with him about, what is this process? Why did I seek a guru when I was 16, 17, 18 years of age? What did that mean for me in my development? So that was one of the things that gave rise to the original writing, and now it's been just more artfully presented by inner tradition.
It's a wonderful thing, isn't it, going through, you know, some difficult times with our parents, for instance, you know, because they don't quite understand, you know, what we're about, why we're choosing this path, and then to have your dad go to India with you and almost come full circle in that understanding. You're able to share your thoughts with him, and hopefully there's a maturity that from both ends that allows you to open to each other. I think that's wonderful when that happens.
Yeah, it was very touching.
You know, the same thing happened for Jim Morrison, you know, the Doors. That I was at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame one time, and there was a letter there in one of the racks that had been written by Jim's dad, who was, you know, a Navy or Air Force colonel or whatever. He was a crusty, you know, traditionalist, and initially had told Jim that he'd never be a singer. You know, it was a waste of time. He had no respect for him. But it was a letter in response to some charge that was laid against Jim in later years. And he said, no, my son has chosen wisely. You know, he's fulfilled a dream. He's exceeded my expectations. I support him. And I thought that, you know, that's wonderful when we can be that magnanimous. Yes. And I think that's part of the spiritual journey, isn't it, is to go from, and you talk about this a lot, you know, go from defensive ego concerns to a more generous, magnanimous heart.
Yeah.
Is that what we're supposed to do?
That sounds really good, to try and gently influence those around us through our own example.
Right.
And, share with others the excitement about the intensification of life that comes from spiritual consciousness and practice and celebration.
Is it true that, you know, the journey is, you know, to find a teacher and then discover that you don't need a teacher ultimately, that you can't live without one, you know, but you didn't really need one in truth. And some people don't have physical teachers today, but we all have teachers of one form, whether it's on the invisible realm or, you know, in contact with that that guru within or whatever. So it's a bit of a conundrum, and you sort of address this throughout the book, don't you?
I'm fascinated by the many forms in which the teacher can appear.
Yes.
Not always as a person. Sometimes as an oracle, like the I Ching, or a teaching
right.
of metaphysics. Or we are directly impacted by an embodied teacher. That's amazing. So this book tries to cover the gamut of ways that we're guided and prodded along on our paths by both physical teachers and teachers whose example comes through in their fiery or intense teachings, their words, their texts. So that I have drawn on the wisdom of teachers in these various ways that I find equally rewarding. And
yes.
It's true, some of the guidance from the unconscious through dreams is unmatchable. So it's a unique medicine that comes from within us through our dream symbols.
You know, I often jokingly... Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead, please.
I was going to say, I often jokingly say that I prefer my teachers to be dead. and I'm being sort of facetious, but... There's something about, you know, the fact that when a teacher is alive and in embodied form, it can be problematic. And you talk about that throughout the book. You know, we tend to glorify or uplift people beyond anything reasonable, sort of deify them. And then when they fall or when they seem to be human or whatever, you know, we're distraught. And with a dead teacher, you don't have that problem. You can just focus on the body of work that they exhibited in their lifetime, and I think Ramana Maharshi is an example of that for me, you know, that he seems very much alive for me, even though he died in 1950 or whatever. It's been a while ago now.
But
and yet, you know, we don't need to have him in a physical form, right?
No, that's true, but at the same time, Reverend Roach, I would also say there's a excitement of the enjoying the leela of a teacher who is excited about their knowledge and their state of consciousness. And the joying of the dance of the liberated personality and being in interaction with a teacher who is provocative and,
yes.
and affects our state of consciousness. So the book entails a journey into sometimes deeper fascination with a teacher, allowing oneself to be deeply influenced and seek almost an inner union or resemblance with a teacher to embody their practices.
Yes,
their,
agreed.
Their ways. So
agreed. Yeah.
And so as our involvement deepens, then the questions of our level of trust in the teacher have to be navigated. And
yes.
So that is another stage in the student-teacher dynamic that I try and talk about, the kind of discomfort that can bring up to us when student and teacher are basically examining each other. You know, because I talk about this as a mutual process, that the teacher has to be evolving themselves through the spiritual teaching, through the work with students. Otherwise, yes, as you mentioned, all kinds of mistake and judgment can occur.
Right, absolutely. And you're perfectly right. You know, I'm being facetious about only wanting dead teachers because, you know, in my own experience, I've been closely, involved with a number of teachers in my life. And as you say, find that to be very rewarding, although it can be at times frustrating. You know, it's frustrating to our ego because we don't want to change sometimes. But it's also frustrating when we see, an exhibition of unskillful behavior, you know, in the
right.
teacher. And
right.
One of the things that you point out was the famous interaction with the poet W.S. Merwin, you know, and Chogyam Trungpa in the latter years of Trungpa's life, you know, when he was really become even more of an alcoholic than he was earlier on. And a sort of an abusive situation arose, right? And it's hard to say that's a spiritual teaching. It just seemed that Trungpa was out of control. And what you noted, though, in the book was that, Chogyam Trungpa actually internalized a lot of it and realized that, you know, that probably wasn't the wise thing that he did. I think it was forcing somebody out of their room, right, to dance naked at a party or whatever it was. But there was that level of self-reflection, right, upon the guru's part there.
Well, maybe in retrospect. Yes, basically a famous poet was invited to a Buddhist Vajrayana retreat, and everybody was getting a little, inebriated, and they were all asked by the guru to take their clothes off. And the esteemed guest and his companion did not want to take their clothes off and were more or less forced to. This is something that happened back in the 70s. It was a very controversial kind of thing. Yes, in retrospect, Trungpa probably, I couldn't say. I didn't know him well, but it was an example we used to talk about. How do you discern when a teacher is exhibiting abusive conduct and when are they tweaking your ego in a big way?
Right,
and
exactly.
How can you make use of that situation to learn something about yourself? Sometimes, as you said, it's very disappointing how some teachers act, the immature behavior and loss of boundaries and things of this kind that you alluded to.
Right.
But what my book, I think, was intended to talk about is the excitement of this process. Even if one teacher disappoints us, we still take something with us. We gain something from our association with that person, we hope.
Absolutely,
but
yeah.
We also have the maturity to move on, to not think that we only have one teacher in this life, although I know some people may hold that view, and to be constantly learning from others and to enjoy and respect and revere those who have developed themselves through their yoga, their meditation, their spiritual life.
Absolutely. And you reference Ram Dass's wonderful book, you know, Grist, Christopher the Mill in that context too, that, you know, ultimately everything's Christopher the Mill. Even the things that seem to be our worst enemies are actually our best friends when we view them, you know, without judgment, without seeing them as, you know, something to destroy us. I mean, I think Milarepa's famous for this, isn't he? When he welcomed the demons into his room and frightened them away in the process, because they were only strong when they sucked off his fear, when his fear was no longer there, when he was willing to embrace them, you know, they freaked out and left him, because I guess they didn't really leave him. He integrated them into his being, so it became an ultimate blessing. And I think this is true of all our teachers. Ultimately, it's all for good, right? Even though it does it masquerades as something else sometimes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Who have been some of the teachers who influenced you?
Well, you know, you were obviously heavily influenced by Swami Muktananda, and I was involved with him for a little bit when I was first on the spiritual path in Britain back in the 70s, and Sai Baba also, and as I say, Ramana Maharshi's dead, but he's a great influence. Sri Nagasagadatta Maharaj, and also I went to an ashram in Wales for many years called the Community of the Many Names of God, and the Guruji there became an influence on me. So, you know, and then I guess coming to Unity, you know, Charles and Myrtle Fillmore, the founders of Unity, were seminal influences as well. So, yeah, there's been many teachers. You know, I'm drawn, I think, to the Advaita style, you know, non-dualistic way of thinking. Uh-huh. And that resonates greatly with me. Before we close the first segment, I want to read from one of Greg's teachers. His name's Dane Rudyard, and it's a lovely quote here. It's at the frontispiece of the book. It says, "An old saying is just as valid today as ever. When the pupil is ready, the master appears. But he may appear in many disguises. What matters is not the master, but the mastery he reveals." What a wonderful line. "It is veiled in his person and has to be contacted through his person rather than in his person. Devotion to a guru may be the way, but sooner or later it should be transmuted into reverence, the truth within the disciple saluting in true humility the truth in the teacher. This is the essential, with all rather mysterious process of transmission." I think that's very eloquently and beautifully put, isn't it? That's the essence there. It's that namaste, ultimately. It's the beholding of the Christ or the Spirit in another, and allow, you know, moving into that awareness is a beautiful process, I think.
Well said, Robert.
I'm with Greg Bogart. He's written a great book, folks. It's really very well argued and laid out. It's called In the Company of Sages, The Journey of a Spiritual Seeker. Very informative for all of us on the spiritual path. I highly recommend it. We're going to take a break, listen to these messages from Unity, and then we'll come back. We'll start looking at, because we haven't even got there yet, have we? We'll start looking at the nine steps in the apprenticeship to glory and realization. All right, let's join us in a couple of minutes.
Unity Online Radio brings you inspiring programs on a variety of spiritual topics. Giving to the network is now easier than ever. Simply text Unity Radio to 72727 from your smartphone. You can make a one-time or recurring donation. Your gifts help us offer enriching spiritual programs that reach listeners around the world. Text Unity Radio to 72727. Thank you for your support.
If you've ever wondered how a specific Bible verse might be interpreted metaphysically, then Interpret This is for you. In Interpret This, Unity Minister Reverend Ed Townley answers your questions about the Bible and how to apply its verses to your life with passion, depth, and spiritual insight. To submit a question or to enjoy any of his numerous metaphysical interpretations, visit unity.org and click on the Interpret This box.
I will leave The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find.
We now return to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach.
All right, welcome back to today's show. I'm with Greg Bogart. We're talking about his book, In the Company of Sages, The Journey of a Spiritual Seeker. And it lays out in nine steps the journey from choosing a teacher to going through initiation, testing both the student and the teacher, and then receiving the grace and the possibilities for awakening from a teacher, but then also the work of separating from that teacher and becoming autonomous within our own being, so we can find the teacher within. And of course, these steps aren't necessarily sequential. We go through different ones at different times, and sometimes, you know, one is more important in our lives than another. But in general, I think these nine steps cover, the flow of this relationship we have with our teacher. And as we said in the first segment, teacher can be anything and everything in a way that, for me, nature is very important. And I know a lot of people in our church would say that if there was a God, it's Mother Nature, and I think many of us feel close to the natural world. But there's also a panoply of teachers, aren't there, both East and West, that are there to help us in some way. Now, your root teacher was Swami Muktananda, right?
Yes, he was living or staying two blocks from where I went to high school when I was 16. He arrived in New York, and so I was immediately drawn into his magnetism.
Yes.
And in the following year, I became quite intense about my meditation experience and traveled to California, to Arcata, for a retreat in 1975. And thereafter would spend my summers, basically, when I wasn't in school, high school or college, visiting him. And after that, I became quite involved with the practice of Hatha Yoga. And so I had a series of teachers in that arena, including Alan Bateman, a really amazing guy in New York, and then all kinds of teachers from the Iyengar Yoga lineage, who really helped
me. Yes. So, man, there's a lovely picture of you in the book, isn't there? Being instructed.
I have a great picture of myself in my underwear doing the warrior pose.
Yes,
K.S. Iyengar.
Yeah, it's a great picture.
See, I asked him a question at a public talk, and he called my bluff. He called me up in front of everybody.
There we go. You got to be careful what you ask for on this spiritual path. Yeah. I'll give it to you. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, one of the things I like is that I've had a number of teachers, and I feel good with most of them, all of them. I feel like if any of them have failed or disappointed me, I've come to accept their limitations as human beings. I'm not permanently scathed by it. And so a lot of people have felt injured by their connections with teachers, so I'm hoping the book brings some possibility of healing and the juicy process of drawing knowledge from wise people and seeking it out and going deep into the practices. And so that's why I wrote this book.
And I think one of the more disappointing aspects of gurus, especially gurus from the East, is that all of them seem to have a susceptibility to, you know, some kind of sexual problem. And I'm not sure if it's just there's such a gulf between Eastern ways of looking and then the West, and they come to the West and they're realized, and then they see the rampant sexuality of the West, and it's sort of overwhelming to them or something, because obviously Chogyam Trungpa was guilty of that, and I, in the book I read that Kalu Rinpoche, one of my favorite Tibetan lamas, he was also
a young lover.
Yeah, had a young lover, oh gosh. And it seemed that sweet looking little old man. I thought, oh no, there's no way he was doing this. But there we go. I still love him. He's still a great teacher. And the Dharma, it was one of my favorite books. So, but yeah, it seems like nearly all of them, had some improprieties in that regard.
Well,
maybe not all of them. But.
I think there it begins with some erroneous idea that there's this disconnect between sex and spirituality.
Right.
And in some doctrines, you're encouraged to close off those channels, for at least for some periods of time, to contain one's energy, and then we expect that to be for some certain people who are basically monks, that they can vows to be sexually abstinent. When they're not, it is quite a shock.
Right.
I wish they wouldn't make the claim in the first place to have transcended sex and desire. You know, that's, I think, a big problem.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's not so much the doing of it, not so much the act, but it's the the lack of integrity. Right, exactly. You know, that, or calling it something else, or having, the disciples call it transmission or whatever, it's not transmission, it's just sex or whatever.
It's the exploitation part of it, where someone is not really a willing or voluntary partner to it. They're just more or less called in and sexually fondled by the teaching.
Right. And there's a power differential there, isn't there, that's disturbing,
There's usually secrecy and you're not supposed to tell anybody, and then the person doesn't feel cherished and like they're in a loving relationship.
Right.
To me, that's the issue, not the, more than anything else.
Well, the other thing that comes up a lot in the book too is the crazy wisdom aspect of teachers. You know, that they seem to act in really weird and strange ways, but it's in order to break us open. There was one technique you shared from Gurdjieff, I think it was, where students were invited to stop, to freeze, any particular aspect that they were in at the time. And I thought that's an interesting technique, because I could see how that could, lead to a sort of a spontaneous opening, because you could question yourself, well, who am I in this position? And not take the body or the body mind quite so seriously, because you may be in a strange position. So it's like you get to look at yourself in an observer of this strange state I'm in right now. So I could see that would be very, very effective, though you shared a story about somebody almost drowned because they were in a drainage ditch or whatever, and it was filling up with water, and they had to hold the position. So, I'm not sure if I'm ready to die, though Jesus did say,
"Great." You're not willing to be that obedient.
Yeah. Greater love has no man that to lay down his life for his friends or his guru or whatever. I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, no. Some of the tests be difficult.
Yeah. You know,
the story you just told was from P.D. Uspensky in Search
for... Oh, it was Uspensky, yeah. It was about Gurdjieff, though, right?
Yeah, it was about Gurdjieff.
Yeah. Yeah. Both very interesting fellows, weren't they? That tradition, the work, whatever. Yeah.
But as it turns out, in the student-teacher relationship, there are likely to be moments where a teacher asks us to exceed ourselves in certain ways, or will challenge that we're very attached to, or just hit us in a sore spot or on our rough cutting edge. that's somewhat to be expected. It's just a question of how hot a fire we can take sometimes.
That's true. Well, you know, in a very simple way, I had a great experience with a guru in Wales because they ran a farm there as well as having an ashram, and we'd just been chanting to the gods in the temple, and then we all came back out into the vestibule, and to the Guruji was talking with his head disciples about milking the cows or taking care of manure or whatever it was. And I felt totally disgusted. I thought, we've just been praying to God. We can't be talking about manure and all these things now. That's such a foolish thing. It took me a few years to realize that's not foolish at all. You know, it's the full integration. Doing the necessary work and also praising God is one and the same. And it was a huge learning experience for me because obviously I had two worlds, you know, the world of spirituality, you know, which was the beautiful world, you know, and then there was the humdrum world, which I wanted to escape from. And of course, right. You know, the work is not to escape, is it? The work is to fully integrate. But that was a huge lesson for me, you know, and I'm sure he wasn't talking just for me, but it was definitely a teaching for me at that particular moment. So, you know, that was a great lesson.
Oh, yeah.
So we go through initiation and discipleship and get to this place where we receive the grace of the guru. And that can mean many things, of course. But
let's back it up for a minute and say when we found a teacher who inspires us, we may approach them and basically ask them to instruct, to accept, to initiate, and to transmit to us something that they know or embody.
Yeah.
And so that initiation is a key phase. And then our lives need to change around this relationship.
Right.
Which I call discipleship. There is an urge to transform through literal discipline, changing our body, our state of mind, our diet, various aspects of purification, alteration in our work, so it's fulfilling livelihood, and basically developing through the inspiration of a teacher to adopt a particular lifestyle or understanding. And by the time we get to the stage you're referring to as the stage of grace, guru yoga, we've been tested through various situations that make us question whether we can surrender into the teacher-student relationship to really make them a central focus of our awareness. And in this stage I describe as grace and guru yoga, we experience the teacher as a vessel, a vehicle, a conduit for something that is greater than the personality. It's beyond physicality. If they're in touch with a deeper part of themselves that is conveyed to us in their embodied presence. And not all teachers that I'm discussing in this book are of this level, of this quality, that they have a capacity for this deeper transmission. Some teachers are just in our lives to pass on a technique, a particular bit of knowledge, a particular body awareness or set of practices. Some teachers are just a little farther ahead than we are, and that's beautiful, that's fine. But when we're in the presence of a teacher that has really attained greatness in a life of consciousness awakening, there is a nonverbal experience, a transmission, and a sense of unity and self-transcending consciousness through reflection on the teacher, the teacher's own state of mind. And
yes.
So this set of practices has been described in Sufism and in Tibetan Buddhism and in several other traditions where we see in the teacher a capacity to convey something much greater than just words and teaching, but they convey an experience. And I used the example of when I was 18. And I traveled to see my teacher, Muktananda, on the day called Guru Purnima, which is like Mother's Day. And that's a day when the guru is said to shower blessings on students. And I went to attend a large public celebration, and there were a large number of people, something like 800 people. I couldn't get anywhere near my teacher. I had no meaningful interaction. And I went home. I rode the bus several hours back to my parents' apartment in New York City, feeling somewhat bereft and disappointed, and went to sleep. Until about 3 a.m., I was awakened in the presence of the holy, the numinous, an experience of bliss, energy, consciousness descending into my body, electrifying every cell of my body for a brief period of clock time, but an unbelievable experience of the sacred, unmatched in my whole life experience. Basically. And so I returned after about a month to see my teacher. He walked into a room full of people. He sat down and he said, "The grace of the Guru is truly unfathomable." He turned his gaze upon me with intensity, and then he pulled his sunglasses down and looked over his sunglasses right at me. And that was a pivotal. And I don't know, it was an amazing experience.
Absolutely.
It provoked like years of thought and reflection on what is the nature, the mystery of grace? What is that source of that? How can I bring it back? How can I be a vessel for that more in my life?
Right. Yeah, beautiful.
So that's an experience of what I mean, and so this stage addresses the deeper transformational yoga through inner meditative attunement with the teacher. And the Tibetans have this very elaborate and beautiful Tibetan guru yoga meditation, which I discuss. And there is a beautiful tanka in the book where you will meet Guru Rinpoche right in the eye. Visual images can convey the presence of a clear consciousness. And that goes back to what you were saying earlier, that the teacher can appear in many forms.
Yes, so, absolutely.
I go on to talk about various experiences that we may be catapulted into as a result of connection with a great sage. And different accounts. I'm sorry?
Let's talk about that in the next segment, because we unfortunately have to cut you off and we go to break right now. But there's a lovely story you tell of how you found a murti of Shiva, right? And had to have it, and it spoke to you so compellingly. And so imagery can be powerful as well on the spiritual journey. But we have to go to break. Let's listen to these messages from Unity, and I'll be right back with Greg Bogart talking about his book, In the Company of Sages. And folks, there's more information than we could ever get into an hour, but I hope you're getting this a sprinkling of the some of the wonders that are available in this book. All right, join us in a couple of minutes.
Hello, listeners. Did you know we've gone mobile? That's right. Your favorite Unity online radio programs are available on your mobile device. Now you can take us with you wherever you go. Using apps from Live 365 or Stitcher, you can listen to Unity online radio live or on demand. To learn more, visit www.unity.fm and click on mobile listening.
There is peace. There is quiet.
Reverend Paulette's mantra is, "It's all a prayer." Tune in every Tuesday as Unity Minister Paulette Pipe leads you in meditation and prayer on Touching the Stillness. Make no mistake, this is not nap time. With an energy that will captivate you, touching the stillness will guide you in deep meditation, leaving you enlivened. Hear astounding meditations and learn more about different forms of meditation. Enrich your prayer life as Reverend Paulette, Senior Minister of Touching the Stillness Ministries, affirmatively prays with power and authority by taking live prayer requests from callers like you. Whether you have a prayer request for yourself or for a loved one or are ready for a deepened meditation experience, make sure you tune in on Tuesdays at 11 a.m. Central Time, where we'll be joining in consciousness with the unceasing prayer activity of the Silent Unity 24/7 Prayer Ministry at Unity Village. That's Touching the Stillness with Reverend Paulette Pipe every Tuesday right here on Unity Online Radio. The voice of an awakening world.
Letting go in the stillness.
Now back to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach.
All right, welcome back to today's show. I'm with Greg Bogart. We're discussing his book, In the Company of Sages. And as I said in the end of the last segment, there's just way too much to really do justice to all these various steps on the spiritual path. But we have to gloss over some things and just give you an idea, a flavor of what this book is all about, because there's lots of detail, lots of wonderful descriptions, and a lot of descriptions for people's personal Ken shows or awakenings, at one of which, you know, Greg himself shared in the last segment, which is a moment that will change your life forever. I remember when I was seven, I had an opening to the white light on a mountain with my dad, and really life's never been the same since that. I realized I'd gone into that that non-local reality that is what we're about. You know, there's no time or space to spirit, as we say. And so, you know, the guru can be right there with us, even though it may be thousands of miles away, and we can have that palpable feeling of the presence, and that's a wonderful thing. You know, we live in a very mysterious universe, don't we, where the numinous is just a hair's breadth away from us.
That's right.
So let's get to the part of the book where we have to create a certain individuation or autonomy, right? Where we have to separate from the teacher in the sense that we're not letting the teacher go as much as we're more empowered or equipped to be mature in our own light, if you like, and then we find that the teacher is within us, and it's really a completion of the teacher's work, isn't it? That we are equipped in to such a degree.
That's a very good description of what I'm saying. I look at different scenarios, in one of which scenario you're very connected to your teacher or teaching or various teachers, and you're ready to be you're ready to mature in your own life, in your own aspirations, your own creativity, to unfold yourself. And that may mean moving away from a teacher's proximity or moving away from formal affiliation with a particular school or teaching. But feeling very full with it. In other instances, someone needs to separate because a teacher is no longer adequate to guide you. You know, that the teacher has committed some actions that have caused you to mistrust them or lose trust or sense of resonance with the teacher. So in some cases, people have some conflicts about separation. Sometimes it's been acrimonious. Sometimes a teacher doesn't want you to move on. Sometimes a teacher tries to hold you in their orbit.
And, right.
And you see this occasionally, not even occasionally, from time to time. Someone who is immature in a way that they need their student to depend on them. They need their devotees to cling to them. So the great teachers I've been with totally fostered my independence. And that's one of the things I celebrate about them, is that they gave me myself. They gave me my own, that their trust in me allowed me to trust my own discernment.
Right.
And my own intuition about the direction of my life. And that's what I believe is a nice resolution of stage seven, which I call separating from the spiritual teacher. But I also delve deeply into the other scenario. Let me muzzle this. All right. Where a student's idealization of a teacher causes problems for them when they are disappointed, when the teacher proves to be not fully, you know, enlightened and benevolent in every aspect of their behavior, demeanor. So
yes,
there are complex separations, you know, just like not all breakups are easy and clean. And so the book goes through the emotional nuances of this process of individuating from the teacher. And this leads to the stage we call finding the teacher within, where you find access to the various new sources of guidance that can include new teachers or learning from the practices themselves. For example, Hatha Yoga is self-liberating. You know, you learn it from the teacher, but ultimately the practice is the guru. The practice is what frees your energy. The practice is what puts you in the balanced yogic frame of mind and meditation. So we learn to enrich ourselves through our own way of life, our own practices, and also, as I mentioned earlier, to access the guidance of dreams, which are the messages of the unconscious and the greater self that wants to be incarnated, that wants to be situated. So I look at these and other processes of creating a synthesis, creating for ourselves the way of being that is our own spiritual path, our spiritual way, which may be a composite of different ways, different knowledge, different aspects of daily life, where
yes,
cooking, gardening, and relating, and being attentive friends are all parts of our spiritual practice. They're not separate. Or, for me, you know, the study of music is a gateway to meditation, different nuanced emotional feeling states. And also I go into pranayama, the incredible self-liberating power of the breath, and different ways to work with that. So the teacher is within. The access to meditation is in the palm of our own hands, where we find, as you were saying, inspiration from the great universal teaching, not just a personal teacher. So finding the teacher within takes many forms. You also alluded earlier to my discussion of sacred images as teachers, as liberating symbols. And the meditating Shiva that I encountered was a tremendous catalyst because it was impersonal. It's not so beautiful to look at, to contemplate. Go ahead, please.
No, please. You're on a roll here. Keep going.
Well, and then there's the mysterious invisible guide, you know, the angel Kidder or Elijah that may come to meet travelers and help them and assist them in mysterious ways.
Right.
It's a difficult moment. And the invisible guide spoken of by the Gnostics, which guide us back to the Pleroma, to the state of blender.
Right, exactly. Cool. Yeah, and I love the word gateway. You know, gates come in all kinds of shapes and forms, don't they? You know, sometimes it's the great gate that leads to a huge city, and sometimes it's just a mud hut with a small gateway into that. But each one is valuable. Each one yields something valuable, And we have a sort of a fascism when it comes to our spiritual teachers, don't we, a little bit, that they have to be perfect. You know, we wouldn't expect your piano teacher to be perfect. You'd expect them to be a good piano player or a good teacher of piano. And yet, we when it comes to a spiritual teacher, we set them up for all kinds of falls from grace. But I love this idea of the mentors. You know, I have a sort of Tibetan based meditation practice I do where I invoke all my mentors and bring them all into a circle and see the light passing between us. And that way I can bring in everybody. You know, they don't have to be perfect. They can be my parents, my school teachers, my spiritual teachers, mentors in other fields. And they're all part of this great, graceful circle of love and possibility. And it frees us of ego concern, I think. You know, I'm not judging anybody. I'm seeing each one has a particular gift to give me. I don't expect them to be perfect, but I know that their gift is perfect and it's graciously given and gratefully received. And I think when we can do that, then we're freeing ourselves of some of these pitfalls we talked about. We're almost at the end of the show, and I wanted to quote Sri Nazagadatta Maharaj that you have right at the end in the epilogue. Let me read this and get your view on this. Maharaj-ji says, life itself is the supreme guru. Be attentive to its lessons and obedient to its commands. When you personalize their source, you have an outer guru. When you take them from life directly, the guru is within. Your own self is your ultimate teacher. It is only your inner teacher that will walk with you
to the goal.
I thought I had my phone on silent, but it wasn't. Did anybody catch what I just read? Greg, are you still there?
I'm still here. I just missed the last few words.
The last sentence of that quote, this is live air, folks. Things happen. It is only your inner teacher that will walk with you to the goal. You know, years ago I woke up or I had this realization, you know, I'm the only person that could wake up in my own body on any given day. You know, nobody else could do it for me. Ultimately, I am autonomous. And you know, it's wonderful to have teachers and everything, but ultimately, I am responsible for me. And there's something incredibly freeing about that, you know, that we take our stand. We are worthy to be present on this planet in our own true selves. And I love that idea.
And that's self-realization.
Yeah. All right, we are at the end of the show. I'd love to have another show with you, Greg. This has been fun. Maybe we'll arrange it sometime.
Please come back.
Let me tell you about next week's show, and then we'll say goodbye finally to Greg. Next week, Cynthia Bougeau, she's an Episcopal priest, mystic, writer, and retreat leader, talks to me about her true story, which she wrote in a book about the mystical union of two souls. It's entitled Love is Stronger Than Death. So that should be a fascinating show also. But right now, I want to thank Greg Bogart. If people want to get in touch with you, Greg, do you have some way
sure.
to do that?
The simplest way is to look at my website, which is www.dawnmountain.com. That's D-A-W-N, dawnmountain.com. And my email address is gbogart7, that's G-B-O-G-A-R-T, numeral 7, at sbcglobal.net.
Lovely. And the book is published by Inner Traditions, but of course you can find it on all the usual outlets, and I highly, highly recommend it. So thank you, Greg, for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Reverend Roach.
And thanks for listening, folks, and we'll see you next week. Take care now.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach.
Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world, and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on Unity FM, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
At Metaphysical Rock 2, we demystify metaphysics to help you live life at a deeper level. One of our key principles is the recognition that you always have the power to choose how you respond to any situation. Instead of asking, why did this happen to me? A better practice, which aligns with the metaphysical principles we share, is to ask yourself the question, how can I use this for good? We promise you'll experience a transformation in thinking that will reap huge dividends as you master the art of living metaphysically. For new perspective and spiritual insight, listen to Metaphysical Romp 2 with co-hosts Reverend Paul Hasselbeck, Reverend Bill Holton, and Reverend Cher Holton. Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Central Time, here on Unity Online Radio.
Does music open your heart and bring you peace and joy? Experience the sacredness of sound with Ramdesh Kaur as we travel the world of mantra, kundalini yoga, and devotional music. Join us for a journey into spirit, Thursdays at 4 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Eastern on Spirit Voyage Radio with Ramdesh. Only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Culture is defined by the Oxford Dictionary as modern popular culture transmitted via mass media and aimed particularly at younger people. But can it be meaningful? Spiritual even? The hosts of Pop Conscious think it can be, and that it can be fun to explore too. Malena Don and Stacey Macris Ross will be your amateur cultural anthropologists examining pop culture and spirituality every Monday at 2 p.m. Central on Pop Conscious on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
At Metaphysical Rock 2, we demystify metaphysics to help you live life at a deeper level. One of our key principles is the recognition that you always have the power to choose how you respond to any situation. Instead of asking, why did this happen to me? A better practice, which aligns with the metaphysical principles we share, is to ask yourself the question, how can I use this for good? We promise you'll experience a transformation in thinking that will reap huge dividends as you master the art of living metaphysically. For new perspective and spiritual insight, listen to Metaphysical Romp 2 with co-hosts Reverend Paul Hasselbeck, Reverend Bill Holton, and Reverend Cher Holton. Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Central Time, here on Unity Online Radio.
Does music open your heart and bring you peace and joy? Experience the sacredness of sound with Ramdesh Kaur as we travel the world of mantra, kundalini yoga, and devotional music. Join us for a journey into spirit, Thursdays at 4 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Eastern on Spirit Voyage Radio with Ramdesh. Only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.